You're listening to Siren Radio with me, Andrew David. It is coming up to 5 to 4 on Tuesday, the 30th of March. Why am I being so specific about the time and the dates? Because you have to know that we are making our intercontinental link with the United States and the Western Seaboard, California, and we go to Woodland Hills in the hope that all these little wiggly wires will connect us to the awesomeness that is Bruce K. Rosenbloom. Are you there?
I am, and I almost fell off my chair because I really thought you were going to mess up intercontinental.
Yes, so did I, because I started thinking about...
like you were going down a road where you were going to go...
Yeah, intercontinental. I was thinking of ballistic missiles, and I thought, we're not going to talk about ICBMs, because it's a beautiful day here, and we are basked in Californian sunshine. It's possibly going to be... I've just had a message from she who has to be obeyed, that some places could be 24.5 degrees Celsius, which is Greek to you. We're 21, which is about 70 Fahrenheit. It's a gorgeous day here in downtown Lincolnshire.
And here, right here in beautiful downtown Woodland Hills, it's 48 degrees Fahrenheit, but our high today is due to be 81 degrees Fahrenheit.
Show off. Don't want to talk to you anymore.
We have kind of the traditional English coolness this morning, but then we're going to have that Malibu sun.
Yeah.
California sunshine a little later on. So we're
you know, you can go off people quite easily. Now, we've got lots of really great stuff to talk about this week, including an unbelievable story about your new puppy. We will come to that. Come hell or high water. I'm not going to blow anything away, but do stay tuned for that, because you are not going to believe the English listeners, the British viewers, the European listeners will not believe what you're going to tell me. Let's talk about, well, here in the UK, we've just started to release ourselves from total lockdown. Things are opening up a bit. But you are talking, and I can't believe this, about the potential for a fourth wave. Your Dr. Fauci is warning really grimly that you are not anywhere out of the woods.
No, we're nowhere near being out of the woods yet. I mean, we are doing a great job getting shots in people's arms, and more people are becoming more acceptable. Biden's getting great reviews for the job he's doing on getting the vaccine out there and distributed. But, you know, people, you know, they just do not want to heed the warning of continuing to wear masks and social distancing and washing hands and just doing the things that will continue, you know, to protect us and to help us get closer to back to normality. And rather than doing that, I mean, as soon as, you know, people hear, oh, the vaccine's out there and everybody's getting it and we're ahead of schedule, states are opening up, they're dropping their mandatory mask wearing. College students are convening for spring break all over the country, and they're being up close and personal with each other and causing all sorts of trouble, as college students will do when during spring break in some of these cities like Miami and down in Florida. And then people for Easter vacations now and spring break will be traveling. You know, the floodgates have opened, the airports and travel are busier than ever before. And, you know, they tell you, do not let your guard down, continue to, you know, to be vigilant, but yet, you know how Americans can be, and
you've got to be careful. It's people the world over, I think, and I think it's the frustration about being kept in for so long. The first opportunity to get out, we want to get out, and who can blame them? There's also been a change of tune, hasn't there, with some of the doctors who were advising President Trump.
Yeah, they you know, Dr. Birx and Redfield and some of the other members of his coronavirus task force have come out and basically said, if we'd have been more straightforward with the American public early on and kind of, you know, countered what the White House was putting out there, we could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives. And, you know, and that's huge. And CNN is doing Dr. Sanjay Gupta is doing a big documentary, and he's interviewed a lot of these people. And the findings are quite shocking and revealing. And you know, Trump has released a statement, and he's been knocking these doctors. And, you know, where does he get off doing that? I mean, you know, he ignored the pandemic. He chose not to lead. He said it would disappear. He even advised us to drink bleach at one point. Whether he was serious or not, he did say it at a press conference and wasn't smiling when he said it. But, you know, and so, and these people never spoke up, and these people never countered what he did, and they just allowed the conditions to worsen. And, you know, Trump's got 500,000 deaths on his hands in this country that could have, a lot of them could have been avoided had he had taken swift action and strong action rather than, you know, labeling it and calling it names and creating a sense of, you know, of fear among the Asian community in this country that is being attacked day in and day out and blamed for this thing as a result of that rhetoric. So if he would have chosen to lead and said, okay, you know, it might be the China virus that might have originated in China, but it's in this country and we need to deal with it and here's how we're going to do it, and had a real plan and let his doctors do what they were, you know, there to do, you know, shoulda, woulda, coulda at this point. But it's a sad commentary, it really is.
And talking about getting together, of course, you and your family, as many people in the Jewish faith, will have wanted to celebrate the Seder for beginning of Passover. But you decided, and quite rightly, you've done it virtually. You know, that could have been a moment where people thought, oh, well, it really doesn't matter. Let's get together because, you know, you celebrated in style. But you didn't. You held yourself back. But I'm guessing the temptation to just, oh, well, it's all right now, we're all being vaccinated, it's very easy to let our guard down.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, usually we would have a huge, huge Passover Seder here. I mean, it would not be just our family, but it would be our friends. And even, you know, and many of our friends aren't of the Jewish faith, but they come and they celebrate with us. And we celebrate Easter with them or Christmas with them. They celebrate Rosh Hashanah or Passover with us. And it's wonderful. I mean, and everybody participates in the rituals and the food, and that's what it's all about. But this year, you know, our bubble is our immediate family, just the kids and us. Jillian and her husband, because she's due any second now, decided that she was not going to risk being outside. So we had her virtually at the table, but, you know, it wasn't the same. I mean, it was, you know, we had all the grandkids here. And the other kids, and we did the what they call the 2-minute Seder. And my grandfather, who was Orthodox, I said, if my grandfather must be rolling over in his grave seeing what we're doing right now, because we just trashed the traditional Passover Seder. But as Evan, my oldest, pointed out, he said, well, he'd be proud that we're at least getting together and doing it.
Yes, absolutely.
Together with the family. So it may not be the way he would be accustomed, but yeah, at least we're doing it, and it's all about family, and that was the case. But it was more of a there was an old show on television here years ago called Romper Room, and it was geared to kindergarten kids, and it was on in the morning before you would go to school, and we had Romper Room Passover.
Very good. Now we've got a really serious subject to talk about. The George Floyd trial has just started. It's getting wall-to-wall coverage here in the UK for all sorts of reasons. Just fill us in on where it is at the moment.
Well, we're in the second day of the trial. It's being broadcast nationally on the cable channels. I've got CNN on right now, and they're cross-examining an MMA fighter who witnessed Floyd's death, so they've been talking to him. But the defense is going to try to set up that they're going to character assassinate Mr. Floyd, unfortunately. They're going to talk about issues the police had with him in the past, because he did have a record, and they're going to talk to you about the fact that he was on some kind of substances, whether you know some sort of drug or something that he might have been on. They're going to say that his death was caused by something other than the officer's knee on his neck. So that's kind of the approach they're going to take. They're going to, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, the visual of that 9 minutes with that officer's knee on George Floyd's neck, with him calling for his mother and telling the officer he can't breathe. I mean, at the end of the day, regardless of what he did, you know, whether it was over a phony $20 bill or regardless of whatever he did in his past, the way he was treated and the way he died was unacceptable. And we'll see if justice is served in that regard. You know, they expect that this trial is going to go anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. So, you know, this is just the beginning of it. And there's a lot of people crowded into the Minneapolis area, you know, a lot of news organizations from all over the world watching this closely. It's a time bomb almost in a way, because I don't think anybody wins here. And you just have to keep your fingers crossed that justice gets served in some way and that the response from the community at large after whatever decision is rendered, that some kind of calm is maintained.
Because well, that's the ultimate.
This is a powder keg. This really is. I mean, it's, you know.
And there could be flashbacks.
And the way they're setting it up, it's kind of like, you know, trying to assassinate Floyd's character versus, you know, what this officer actually did and that the world saw. You know, it's coming from two totally different places. So,
you know. Interesting, because our next story, in some senses, is a race-related story. Georgia have actually gone ahead with this legislation, haven't they, to really clamp down on things, even as odd as not being able to hand out water if you're waiting in line to vote.
Yeah, and it's funny that while the Georgia Secretary of State and the head of the elections and the governor all stood by the fact that Georgia's election was fair, free and fair, and they did not cave into Trump's phone calls and pressure campaign. The Republican legislature put through all the things that Trump wanted, and the governor signed it. And they're putting up candidates to run against the people who were not loyal to him in Georgia. But the new bill that was passed gives the Georgia legislature power over the Secretary of State. That gives them power over who the electors are. They can basically, if they do not agree with the election outcome and who wins, they can actually overrule the will of the people in Georgia. They've made it harder for people of color to vote, in many different ways by shortening up hours of voting, days of voting, early voting, drop boxes, mail-in, stricter identification. ID methods for voting. It makes it very, very difficult for many people, mostly people of color in this state, to vote. It's funny that the governor, when he signed the bill, a black Democratic legislator from Georgia was pounding on the door, wanted to get in there, and they arrested her and put her in jail. And you know, unbelievable that would actually happen to a member of the legislature. And he signed the bill under a painting of a plantation that was home to many slaves, and it was a horrendous plantation for how slaves were treated. And so that bill was signed. So they're calling it the Jim Crow in a new suit law. And it's horrible. It really is. I mean, it's taken the state of Georgia and this country back hundreds of years by what they just initiated. There's been some significant lawsuits filed against the constitutionality of this law. And hopefully, if it gets to the courts there, that some judge with a clear mind and clear thinking will see what this really is and it will not allow it to go forward.
But of course, we are living, as we've said on this program, in very strange times. It's American Cousins with Bruce K. Rosenblum in LA and me, Andrew David, here in the United Kingdom. There's other things bubbling along.
I'm sorry, Andrew, but we'll see where this goes.
Right.
Because you know, a lot of people are saying that this could just backfire on them, that it's going to really rile up voters and going to get them to come out in more ways than they could have ever imagined. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, I interrupted you. But just a reminder, we're recording this at about 10 minutes past four on Tuesday, the 30th of March, if you happen to be listening to this edition of American Cousins at any other time. South Dakota, I think, is where we're going next. We're moving around your country beautifully. And the governor there's got themselves into hot water over a transgender issue.
Well, Kristi Noem is a conservative. She's a Trump loyalist, and she was the one that had him come to the Mount Rushmore for a July 4th celebration there. It was a super spreader event that happened there. She also allowed, you know, I think the Sturgis motorcycle rally, which became a huge super spreader event, to take place there. And so she signed some executive orders against allowing people who are claimed to be transgenders to participate in sports. So she says girls should play in girls' sports and boys should play boys' sports, and boys should use boys' bathrooms and girls should use girls' bathrooms. And it's very discriminatory against someone who's a transgender. I mean, why not allow just because someone's a transgender, it means that they can't play a sport.
No.
I mean, just the whole thing just seems weird. I mean, it's like this country to me sometimes is so forward thinking on one hand and it's so backwards on the other. I mean, sometimes when it comes to just, you know, from a social issue point of view, we can be so closed minded and so backwards. And yet from a technology and science and, you know, from that kind of standpoint, we can be so forward thinking. And you would think that a country moving so forward, being so forward thinking, trying to form a more perfect union, you know, by pushing forward and then reaching out to be part of a global community to tackle issues that are of global concern, like water and air and science, can still be fighting battles from 150, 200 years ago, like the Civil War and, you know, people getting all upset about, you know, being able to hang a Confederate flag and thing. I mean, it's just, it's mind boggling to me. And it's a head scratcher to me because, you know, a lot of the stuff that we do should be what they call a no brainer. Yet it turns out being what they call a head scratcher, you know, you know what I'm saying, right?
Oh, I do.
There's certain things you should just be doing and you don't have to, it's a no brainer. You don't have to think about it. And then certain things that happen, You are you kidding me? I mean,
how did that happen?
You say why, and I don't understand why people can't be a little bit more tolerant in this day and age, when more people are coming out as transgender and more people are coming out as gay, as lesbian, whatever they are. I mean, you know, people's sexual identity isn't, you know, it's come a long way, but it's still in many cases some of the thinking around it is so backwards, and you know. I can't believe that people are a little bit more accepting of other people and how, you know, and instead of being concerned how other people live their lives, just, you know, allow them to do that and just worry about how you live yours, you know.
Now, you see, you and I are well traveled, and I think the French have got it right when it comes down to mixed toilets or not mixed toilets, because I can remember the first time, I think I must have been a teenager in the mid 1970s, went to Paris and got off the plane and needed to go to the loo, went in the gents' door, which was next to the female door, which in the United Kingdom would lead you to a gents only area and a women's only area. And then the two doors just opened up into the same area. And I thought, hello, this is wrong. And then I realized how stupid it was that I thought it was wrong, because the French have a much more open way of thinking about this. And if anybody listening wants to watch a wonderful television series, it's called Clochemel, and it's about a little village in France that decides it wants to design and build an open air men's toilet. I'll just leave that there hanging in the air.
I mean, and I know you and I think we think kind of alike on this. As far as I'm concerned, I don't care, you know, what color you are. I don't care what gender you are.
Yep.
You know, I try to reserve judgment on people based on who they are. I mean, what's in their heart, what's in their head. If somebody, you know, is compassionate and, you know, and can teach me something that I don't know, or teach me a better way of doing something, or opening my eyes to something I haven't seen. I mean, I am all accepting of that. I don't care where that comes from. If somebody can make me a better person, you know, I don't care if, you know, I don't care what they look like or where they come from or what they believe in, you know. So I try to live my life by being very open minded about that. I don't try to, you know, I don't try to judge a book by its cover. I try to judge the book after I read it. You know what I'm saying?
And absolutely.
I would hope that most people feel that way, but unfortunately we see so many cases where we don't see that. And it just, I don't know. I don't have an answer. I don't know why that is, but I mean, you know.
Well, talking of answers, there are things which we know and the things we don't know. And there's a Donald Rumsfeld, but Joe Biden seems to be doing fairly well on his half-term report card. But there's one little blight. He's doing quite well in his approval rating and on vaccines, but the border crisis is still causing him some serious knockback, really.
Yeah, well, he's not even into his first 100 days yet. I mean, we're getting close, but he's what, 70 days in or 60-some-odd days in? And his approval rating is up in the 50s right now, like 52 or 53%, which is very good. It's ahead of where Trump was, for sure. But In the polls right now, his approval rating is around in the high 70s on how he's handling the pandemic and how he's handling the economy right now. But it's about half that on the immigration situation that's going on. And as good as the economy and good as people are as far as, you know, getting the vaccine and the job he's doing there, he's a problem solver and he's getting that stuff done. But he's going to have to turn his problem-solving skills to what's going on at the border, because that's going to dog him throughout his whole presidency if he doesn't get a handle on it and get a handle on it quickly. But it's a problem because it's one of these problems that no president has really been able to deal with, you know, because it's a problem that's dogged lots of presidents. And what he did was, he may have, you know, reacted a little bit too quickly to turning around some of the things Trump did down there. I know he's blamed Trump for a lot of the problems at the border and a lot of the inhumane conditions that were set up at the border as a result of what Trump did. And what's happening with Biden right now is somewhat different than what was going on with Trump, because when Trump was at the border, he claimed that caravans of people were coming to come into the U.S. and to cause trouble. And when families were showing up, he was separating the kids from the parents and putting people in cages. It's a little different now. The parents are sending the kids by themselves. There's an influx of teenagers and young children that are coming in by the thousands, and it's growing worse every day. And the Biden administration is really, he's appointed Kamala Harris to go down there and head up this immigration task force and to help lead the charge to solving the problem. But it's a big problem, and he is doing his best to find facilities to place these children, to make sure that they've got clean beds and good food to eat and getting education programs in place down there. But each day it's just backing up and backing up. They have shut down some of the border and they've told people not to come, but you know, they're still coming, and he's going to have to deal with it. And the Republicans, because they can't seize on what Biden has done with the economy and they can't seize on what the success he's had with the pandemic, have all flocked to the border down there and put on a grand show and trying to show how bad it is and how badly Biden has messed up the border. You know, so they've seized on that as a way to attack. And it's kind of a shame, but you know, so that's what they're focusing on, and it's no surprise. But Biden does have a problem, and it's going to dog him unless he really gets a handle on it and gets this problem under control. So you know, and hopefully, you know, I don't doubt that he will. It's going to take time because none of these kinds
can't be fixed overnight.
Yeah, you don't fix them overnight. So you know, and now Trump, you know, and Trump. Again, you know, he's not the normal president. You know, most presidents who lose elections kind of disappear, as Obama did after he left office. You never heard one word of him criticizing anything Trump did for 4 years. Well, that's not the case with Trump. So he's been out there. You know, he doesn't have they're talking about him creating his own social media platform so he can have a voice again, because he's off of Twitter and Facebook and all the other platforms. He puts out statements. He's commenting on everything. There's talk that he wants to go down to the border and have a big show down at the border. So, yeah, he just doesn't want to go away. It's just that he got voted out. He didn't concede. He still thinks he's president of the United States. And I think it's not as if he didn't do enough damage to this country already, but the more he opens his mouth and the more he gets involved, he just makes things worse. And we voted him out so we would have a clean start with a new president. And yet we still have it just the fact that we're even talking about him, we shouldn't be. You know, we shouldn't be giving him any more airtime because he doesn't deserve it at this point. We should be focusing on the problems that Biden is trying to attack and solve and what he wants to do for the country.
Absolutely. So let's draw a line there. Still to come, the new puppy and how he's arriving in L.A. But before we do that, the Dodgers are starting their series on the 1st of April, April Fool's Day. And sort of tied in with that is how you're going to have people in the stadium. And tied into that is the subject I want to just briefly go to next. You and I do not have a problem over something called a vaccine passport. It's been talked about out here in the UK, and there are ideas that a vaccine passport would help to show people that you've had your vaccine. But you want to try and think of expanding it into, let's call it a Medi passport, where all of your details, where you travel, wherever you travel, could be accessed in this app or whatever. And I think that's worth a punt.
Yeah, I think that a lot in New York City right now, they're doing this vaccine passport, and it's pretty popular and it's been pretty successful, where they give you a code number, you dial it in, and it pulls up your vaccine record to show that you've gotten your coronavirus vaccine. But, you know, a lot of hospitals, and one of the hospital chains that where my doctor is based out of, which is the Cedars-Sinai hospital chain here, they have their own app. And on that app, I can go in and get all my medical records, all my medications, I can schedule appointments, I can do all of this stuff. And it just seems to me we should, you know, everybody in the world should have a medical passport and online access. You know, people will say, oh, well, it's an invasion of privacy, blah, 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 blah. Well, it may be, but most of your information is already in the hands of hospitals and doctors and pharmacies. And, you know, every time, you know, when you go to get your vaccine, you fill out the forms and they put you in a computer to prove that you've gotten your shot. So, you know, if you any university hospital that you've been to, they have your record. So why not just allow you to have a code and you can go in and you can pull up your medical record? So if I'm in Lincoln and I'm visiting you and something happens, I break my leg or I get sick, and you have to take me to a hospital, you know, I can pull up my medical history, have a list of all my medications, have a list of everything that I've had, all my vaccinations, and I can and the doctors that are treating me in Lincoln can connect with my doctors here in Woodland Hills, and they can do it on Skype. They can talk in person, or they can talk, you know, through data transmission or whatever they do. It just seems to me that would be, you know, so if you're going into to a Dodger Stadium now.
Yep, do tell.
You know, if you pull up your medical passport and you say, okay, I'm going, you know, and what you have is one of those, like, those codes that you, when you buy something at the supermarket and they scan it. So you open up your medical record and a code comes, you know, one of those barcodes come up with your vaccine record on it. So you go into the stadium, you put your phone up, they scan it, and they see that your vaccine came up, and you go right in. You know, it takes 2 seconds, and you don't have to, you know, spend a piece of paper or do whatever you do. I mean, it's right there. You know, your picture comes up on the barcode, your picture comes up identifying you, and then your vaccine record comes up, and they know that you're in there. So for Dodger Stadium, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I can say that's going to be crucial because they want to open the season this year, and this year they also want to have people in that magnificent stadium that you've been very kind to take Debbie and me to. It's massive, holds 50 or 60,000. How is that going to work? And I think technology is going to play a part in it, isn't it?
Right, it's going to play a big part in it. Dodger Stadium holds now, after the remodel, about 60,000 people or so. So they are going to allow 20% capacity. So about 12,000 will come in. They'll be seated strategically around the ballpark. And it'll be contactless because everything, you know, you won't be standing in lines for food or concessions. You'll be doing everything off of an app from your seat, and they will deliver the food to your seat, and you will pay through your app. So there will not be any exchange of money, and there will not be any standing in line. And it'll be all done virtually, basically. And again, but when you go into the stadium, how are they going to know if you've had your vaccination or not, right? Yeah. So if you had this virtual, this vaccine passport thing, where the Dodgers have a thing when you enter the stadium, they actually have a thing called, when you buy tickets, they give you what they call a passport. And when you check in at the stadium, you pull up your passport, which is assigned to you, has a barcode. And you scan it in at a kiosk as you enter the stadium. And A, it lets them know that you're in the stadium. B, it registers you for drawings that they have, free drawings. You can win tickets or prizes or whatever. And so if you had that same vaccine barcode on your phone, when you enter the stadium, when you scan your Dodger passport to let them know that you're there, if it just scanned the fact that you're there but you've had your vaccine, why not do that?
Yeah.
Because right now, as you're going into the stadium, they don't know if you've had your shot or not, unless you bring your proof of vaccine card. And I don't know that they're not going to let you in if you haven't had a shot. but they're going to certainly make you wear a mask and they're going to socially distance you from other fans. But it just seems to me that the idea of this vaccine passport or this medical passport would be a huge problem solver on a lot of different fronts.
Now, everybody is screaming at the radio, okay, that's fine, that's lovely, but we want to know about the golden doodle. Because we do know that you and Jackie are about to take take delivery. You're going to have a new arrival in Woodland Hills. It's the wonderfully named Duke of Edinburgh, or Sir Duke, or the Duke that you told us about last week, the famous Dodger player and all the rest of it. But Duke at the moment is in Utah, which is quite a drive. But he's not arriving by car, is he?
No, he's gonna fly out
under
somebody's seat.
Say that again. He's flying.
He's flying out under somebody's seat. He's actually coming with a dog nanny. It's first of all, we're transitioning from 115-pound American bulldogs to a 15-pound golden doodle, a mini golden doodle who will probably be no more than 15 to 20 pounds full grown. And we've named him Duke after the Duke of Edinburgh.
Very good. Well done.
He's in training right now. He'll be about 12 weeks old when we get him.
Goodness.
And some airlines won't fly a puppy unless they're at least 4 months old. But I believe he's going to come Southwest Airlines, and they allow him to be in a little carrier under a seat. So he's going to have what they call a dog nanny. And he's going to have a full journey coming from Salt Lake City, Utah to, I think he's coming into Burbank, which is close to us.
Just up the road,
just up the road. So he'll depending on the flight that he gets, it'll either be a 6-hour morning for him to get here or a 3.5-hour morning for him to get here, depending on the flight. And we're just waiting on confirming what day he'll be here, but he's finishing up his second week of training this week. And then he'll be ready to go. So far, he's good on going outside. They're housebreaking him, and they trained him to sit and stay, but he's not good on the leash, so they're working on his leash protocol this week. And then he'll be part of our family, and he's a little guy that, you know, I really miss the companionship of the dogs, yeah. And this guy will be a really good companion and somebody we can take with him when we travel, which is good, so.
Oh, that's going to be fantastic.
We'll be able to pop him in his little carrier and take him with us and really have, you know, leaving him home all the time or out in the backyard. And we have to be careful leaving him out in the backyard because, as you know, we have coyotes in our area and we have hawks that like to swoop down and pick up small animals. So
we don't want that.
We have to be careful with him out in the backyard. You have to watch him at all times. There was a movie
Ryan O'Neill.
Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock were.
Ah, yes.
You remember that, where they go off to Alaska? She needs to stay in the country, so they plan a fake wedding. She goes to Alaska, and they're gonna tell his family that they're getting married, and there's an immigration guy that's on to her and chases her down. But the family, and they have this great house in Sitka, Alaska, and they have this small little dog, and the little dog gets out, and while Sandra Bullock's on her phone, a hawk or an eagle flies down and picks up the dog and starts to fly away with the dog. So we have to be careful
That's
of that. With this
not going to happen
guy
to the Duke. No, that mustn't happen to him. And just finally.
We have these northern harriers, these huge hawks that have to come into.
Yeah. So. No. Finally, your medical expert from North Wales is saying, how's your knee going and when's it going to be sorted?
The knee is really killing me as we speak. I'm in dire pain right now. I've shredded my meniscus, along with the arthritis that's under the kneecap. But the doctor was explaining to me that in order to get a full knee replacement, there's three cavities of the knee, and all three have to be in bad shape in order for them to advise a knee replacement, total knee replacement. One cavity of my knee is perfectly fine, but the other cavity, the meniscus is shredded, and the third cavity is filled with arthritis and I guess it's calcium deposits or whatever. So we're going to go in on April 15th, which is tax day in this country. And I'm going to, he's going to do something to clean out the meniscus and clean out the arthritis. And hopefully it will leave me pain free so we can kick the can down the road on the ultimate knee replacement, which will ultimately happen. But if we can kick it down the road for a while, that's the whole idea of this.
Good. Well, keep our fingers crossed you're not too much in too much pain. But to take your mind off it, Mr. Goldwyn Dougal will be flying in from Utah. I'm still chuckling, and I'm sure everybody listening is going, flying in from Dougal at 12 weeks. Hey, yeah. Bruce, it's been fantastic. Thank you so much indeed for joining us this afternoon, or whenever you happen to be listening to it. It's this afternoon in the UK. It's coming up to 4:30 on the 30th of March. Thank you very much indeed to Bruce K. Rosenblum for being just so wonderful on American Cousins. Bruce, thanks very much.
My pleasure, Andrew, and look forward to speaking with you and keeping you all apprised of how the knee surgery goes and the arrival of the new puppy.
Absolutely fantastic. You take care, sir.
I will. You do the same.